Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is our hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hosts Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more throughout the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Sorry about that, Misty. Anyway, good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Good evening, Bonnie. How are you today?
I'm probably incoherent because I can't even read the introduction right, but that's okay.
That's okay. People, it's getting light.
Hopefully people will forgive me. Hopefully. So I want to say hello to all of our listeners, and thank you very much for supporting our show. You know, it means a lot to Misty and me when we get these wonderful letters from people saying how much the show means to them, because this is one way for them to connect, and this is from people all over the world. So welcome to our show for tonight. And I just want to mention that next week we have a wonderful guest. I want to start with that rather than end with it for, you know, for people who are listening. And it's a new friend that I've made who lives in Florida, and her name is Debbie. And Debbie is a nurse, and she also does a lot of volunteer work with the church. And she has a show, in fact, that I'll be on tomorrow night in Florida. And, in fact, if it wasn't so late, Misty, I would tell you maybe you should listen, but I think you should be sleeping by 11 o'clock.
Yeah,
well,
sorry, but I should be in.
Then again, you might be working at 11 o'clock. You never know. But,
well, that's more likely, and I won't even go there.
But it's a show that can be, you know, heard online, and if anybody's interested, just drop me a note at bondk@aol.com, and I'll give you the exact link for listening to the show. And you can listen on your computer. And Debbie's, like I say, an amazing woman who has a website out that'll be, you know, showcased in my upcoming newsletter. And the web address, in case you'd like to get a preview, is www.southfloridaconnects.com. And it's called Connecting the Download Clues. And Debbie has this whole website on what the signs are, and an encouragement blog, and HIV testing, the down low in the church, which, you know, is a really big issue for her, you know, as far as she's concerned. And, you know, like I said, there's so many different wonderful things on her website. So if you have a chance, you can go to www.southfloridaconnects.com and take a look at Debbie's website, and she'll be our guest next week. And so I'm really excited that we'll have, you know, a show talking from her perspective about men on the down low, and that will be coming up next week. So, Misty, do you have any workshops coming up that we can talk about first also?
Excuse me, yes, I have one coming up. Well, time flies. I think it is the November the 20th. Is that the Saturday before Thanksgiving? If so, I give you the correct date. If not, it will be the Saturday before Thanksgiving at noon, Eastern Standard Time. It's about getting to the holidays, just a little jump start to get you through there, because it's the worst time of the year. It really is. It can be really tough to get through there, and it's good to have those connections. So if you want any more information about that, you can email me at MistyLynnHall@AOL.com, MistyLynnHall@AOL.com, or you can send an email from my website, MistyHall.com, MistyHall.com.
Thank you, Misty. And also, if any of our callers would like to, if any of our listeners would like to call in tonight, here's the call-in number for us. We're at area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat it one more time. It's area code 646-716-4893. So tonight's topic that we're going to be discussing, because I know it's a painful topic for a lot of people, but it's an important topic, and it kind of revolves around something that's very close to my local heart here in Philadelphia, but I think this has been an international news event that, you know, people in our chat room who are in other countries were telling me tonight that, you know, certainly was news in their countries, in Australia and Canada. And this is the event that happened this past week at Penn State University. So have you been hearing about that a lot down there, Misty?
I don't listen to the news a lot. I shield myself from that. But I have been hearing a lot about it, and it's really sad from what I've heard.
Yes, in fact, it's news all the time here. I mean, it's almost like every month in the news because
it's the back door.
It's just such a horrific, horrible thing that's happened, and it just seems that there are so many people, so many different layers of this. And in fact, I read the whole grand jury report that came out, 23 pages, listing all of the incidents. And,
wow.
Of course, you might be wondering, why do I want to discuss that on this particular show? So I'm going to tell you exactly why I want to discuss it, because so many times within this whole week, people keep making the comments that this man, Jerry Sandusky, who was molesting all these young boys. And I received a number of letters from women who were horrified, and I'll go beyond that, petrified, that is it dangerous to be around gay men because their husbands are gay? Will their husbands' friends be molesting their kids? And when something like this comes up, it happened when they had the indictments in the beginning of the priests, who were pedophiles also in the church, that a lot of women really get very scared. Is this going to happen with their husbands? Are they going to go after young boys? And you do hear a lot of stories, even within, our own network of, thousands of people that are part of my support network, that when their husbands leave the marriages, that they go with guys who are 10 or 15 years younger than they are, or 20 years younger, which is really not that uncommon, for a middle-aged man to look for a young guy who's in his, 20s or 30s. But I just felt the need to discuss this because people panic and they have irrational thoughts over this. And I thought it was really important to mention to people that pedophilia and homosexuality do not go hand in hand. It's like putting two and two together and getting seven. I mean, people have this kind of, illogical thinking. Really it's not helpful and it's not healthy for anybody, you, your children, your family unit. It's just not true, and I think that people get this impression because you see these older men with young boys. But I think it's also important to note that I did a lot of studying on the issue of pedophilia when I was going and getting my master's degree. And in fact, I did a lot of research. This was my topic on understanding, pedophiles. And I spent almost a year doing extensive research. Of course, it was many years ago. But I learned a lot, and one thing I certainly did learn is that pedophiles are just looking for young children. They don't necessarily have a preference, they just whatever they can get easy access to. And that's why, I've read a lot of articles in recent years about the priests that were pedophiles. And, of course, people blame the fact that they were priests, becoming pedophiles. They were pedophiles first, then they became priests, so they would have easy access to children. And I think that's where the Catholic Church really went wrong in not mentioning that, So you can come up with a million reasons after they joined the ministry, but they were always pedophiles, and that's why they joined the ministry.
Mm-hmm. I agree
but
with that.
They talk about, how they had, they were going after boys, or like this guy Sandusky was going after boys. And so they put two and two together and still come up with, six or seven or eight or the wrong answer. The point is that it is easy access. And I don't think it really necessarily matters what the sex of the child is. They were saying in an article I was reading that for priests, they have access, like with altar boys, because they're closely, there together. In other words, the way the Catholic Church is set up, you wouldn't have girls working as altar boys when,
Okay.
It's a boy's job. So naturally, that's who the priests have easy access to, not necessarily because it's a boy, but because it's a child. And the same thing happens, like I say, with this guy, Sandusky. He set up a youth organization, and just about every boy he's molested that I've read about so far, they had easy access, and they all came from this youth organization that he set up. So I think it was just easier to access boys because, he was a coach on a football team, which is a boys' sport, and it wouldn't look unusual to be around young boys being a mentor to them. And so I think that's what happened. But I wanted to read a little bit. It's called Ending the Gay Pedophile Myth. And I thought that might make people feel better. So let me just pull this up. And it's from the change.org news. And as I'm pulling it up, if anybody would like any copies of these articles, just write to me, and I'll be happy to send them your way. But I think it's really important for people to know the difference between gay and pedophile so that it takes away from the fear that you might have having a gay husband. But here it says, Ending the Gay Pedophile Myth. Let me just pull this up the right way. And it says, here we go again. Officials inside the Catholic Church have once again deemed the seemingly endless instances of child molestation and pedophilia in the church as a gay problem. Frankly, and this was written by somebody named Abby Clough, and it was from last year. And it says, frankly, I'm surprised it took this long for someone to blame it squarely and explicitly on us, considering the stereotype gay person as a child molester continues to creep behind the gay and lesbian community, always lurking in the shadow of our shared consciousness, waiting to pop out and make us look like we're despicable fiends, easily capable of the worst crime in the world. It is the cross to bear of subjugated groups of some sort of fundamental fault or flaw that bigots hang their hats on when they make the case against us. Racists often characterize African-American men as beastly rapists, a threat to all white women. Women must counteract the notion that we are Jezebels, Delilahs, who will ruin people's lives if we are left to our own to our own devices. And on it goes throughout history and across racial, gender, and ethnic bounds. Oppressors tell the world a lie, usually centered on some sexual perversion or malfunction, and the world makes the lie a shared reality. All too often, we in the gay community mistakenly believe that no rational human being could possibly believe that because we have same-sex attraction, it means that we want to enact them on children. Because we know how ridiculous it is, we often don't raise hell as often or as much as possible, believing that other people see the bad logic. Or, for many of us, being characterized as evil pedophiles curbs us from defending ourselves. The shame they've placed on us becomes a part of who we are as a culture. It silences us because in our darkest hour, we're terrified that those around us really believe on some level that we have the capability to molest children. Once and for all, we need to proactively, rigorously, and consistently dispel this rumor. If we want to defend ourselves, we're only running on a treadmill, never able to get ahead of it. And worst of all, it isn't even the gay community who is hurt the worst. It's the children who have been molested. Already, pedophilia is a crime that goes vastly underreported, as the victims take on feelings of guilt, shame, and self-blame. Many psychologists believe this repression and silencing to be one of the most harmful effects of child molestation besides the act itself. Many victims carry this burden alone for far too long, and as a result, suffer irreparable lifelong consequences. This terrible truth, the concealment of a crime, is greatly exacerbated by the connection of homosexuality and pedophilia. Young boys especially fear they will be perceived as gay, and therefore keep the secret longer than they ever should have to. In this way, homophobia is causing excruciating pain in our child victims. For these reasons, we must equip ourselves with the know-how to blast these untrue allegations out of the water. In order to combat the lies, here are the most widely accepted ideas of what makes a child molester. First of all, access. There is a reason that there's a disproportionate amount of churches and youth organizations that have chronic problems with molestation. They provide sex abusers with access to children. For instance, in the Catholic Church, altar boys help the priests in various activities and often long periods of time, which gives sexually repressed men access, privacy, and time. Simply put, it's a matter of what's available. In fact, most cases of sexual abuse occur between relatives, family friends, or within the primary family unit. One study found that children are 36 times more likely to be molested by a husband or male partner who has access and a self-identified gay person. Another one is psychological problems. This one could probably go without saying. The psychological field hasn't yet determined one particular mental disorder which explains pedophilia, but they do agree it's a result of some sort of abnormality which causes a fixation on children, whether that child is a girl or a boy. Some believe that child molesters are Peter Pans, unable or unwilling to leave childhood, hence their preference for children. Others believe the motivation of abusers is simply to rape. The perversion is about control and has little or nothing to do with gender. Next it says arbitrary preference. What makes a celebrity stalker choose Kate Hudson over Kate Bosworth? Or what causes a rapist to single out victims of a particular race? Child molesters' victims' preferences widely vary, ages, gender, race, etc. And the cause for the preference is inexplicable. To relate preference to sexual identity isn't only wrong, it's purposely irresponsible to children. It isn't acceptable for the gay community to rely on good sense from the public, religious, and political figures, or even our own friends and families to understand the difference between homosexuality and sexual abusers. We need to plaster our websites, blogs, Facebook statuses, and messages concerning this terrible misconception. We must educate friends and family about the dangers of this line of thinking and the harm that not only does to the gay community, but to the children who suffer at the hands of child molesters. If not, we will always be playing dodgeball with some guys in funny hats who throw us under a bus because, hey, if someone has to get run over for the sexual abuse of dozens of children, surely no one will mind if it's the gays. We have to make them mind. And that was that article. And I thought that was very good. What did you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's fairly accurate. It just, this whole thing is just, I'm sure, causing pandemonium, especially among our group of women, because of things you said earlier, that some people just are so apt to connect homosexuality to that person to be a pedophile. It just doesn't go together. You know, it's, I'm not saying it never came, but I mean, it's just not something that normally goes together. And it's just really sad when people make that jump. If you're one, you're the other. And that's not the way it goes. It goes back to, here's my thought on it. I think as parents sometimes really make the big mistake of, you know, you tell your children, oh, be careful of these people. And basically they make this possible pedophile out to look like this one-eyed cyclops monster. That's not what a pedophile looks like.
A
pedophile looks
not.
Like your neighbor. It looks, it's someone upstanding because, like you said, they usually have easy access to children. It can be someone very educated. It can be someone in a church. It can be someone on a coach. It can be someone in Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, this person does not look like a monster. So you have to teach your children. If someone teaches you touches you inappropriate, I mean, it doesn't mean that because you know them, it's okay. You know, and I think parents sometimes make that mistake of making out, you know, Chester the molester to look like someone that's a monster. And it's not. They look very appetizing. You know, they look very friendly. They know how to get children to draw to them. You know, that's what they do. And it's just such a bizarre sickness that it's just really hard to wrap my brain around, you know. And it's just, it bothers me that people do make the connection. You know, even though I'm a straight spouse, formerly married to a gay man, it bothers me that people make the connection between pedophilia and homosexuality because there's just really not a connection there. And that's
no,
my
but
opinion.
Unfortunately, that's not the way a lot of people see it because they just don't understand.
I know.
There was this other good article written this week from a gay alumnus who reflects on Penn State tragedy. And it says, when news broke this week about the heartbreaking tragedy unfolding at Penn State, a few easy predictions came to mind. Iconic coach Joe Paterno wouldn't survive. The university president would have to go too. And anti-gay hate groups would try to exploit Jerry Sandusky's sick crimes for financial gain. On Wednesday, my first two predictions came to pass as the university's board of trustees fired both Paterno and Graham Spanier. Then Thursday, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality launched its inevitable broadside against gays, and the Westboro Baptist Church announced plans for one of its protests at the Penn State-Nebraska game on Saturday. Sandusky faces 40 charges related to the alleged abuse of 8 boys over 15 years, including allegations he raped at least one young boy in the shower on the Penn State campus. He used his charity, The Second Mile, which ostensibly helped at-risk children in Pennsylvania, to meet his alleged victims. I'm reluctant to address the canard that gay men are disproportionately predisposed to molesting children, as it has been debunked and disproven by dozens of studies. But in anticipation of the right-wing extremists trotting out that old lie, here it goes. AFTA's leader, Peter LaBera, is a man oddly obsessed with gay people and has devoted his life to demonizing us. You know what they say about those who doth protest too much. In his recent commentary on the Penn State scandal, LaBarbera labels Sandusky as homosexual and contends, there is such a long history connecting homosexuality to pederasty and a disproportionate link between homosexuality and pedophilia. AFTA was a labeled hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center and has a long record of attacking gays using junk science to bolster its false claims. So consider the source. Simply put, homosexual men are not more likely to sexually abuse children than heterosexual men are. That's from the American Psychological Association. LaBarbera states pedophilia, but that term refers to an adult psychological order characterized by a preference for prepubescent children as sexual partners, according to medical experts. A preference for children has nothing to do with sexual orientation. And, quote, many child molesters don't really have adult sexual orientation. They have never developed the capacity for mature sexual relationship with other adults, either men or women. Instead, their sexual attractions focus on children, boys, girl, or children of both sexes, according to the experts of the University of California. And Sandusky was married with 2 grown children, an inconvenient fact that further undermines LaBarbera's labels. Surveying the faces of the Penn State scandal, Sandusky, Paterno, Spanier, Coach Mike McCreary, the athletic director Tim Curley, and the vice president Gary Schultz, all are straight men. The scandal isn't about gay men. It's about greed and a culture that prizes money over doing the right thing. I'm a Penn State alumnus, and I have served on the board of the campus LGBTA Student Resource Center for several years. The center is an important and even life-saving resource for students there. Many Penn Staters come from rural parts of the state where acceptance and understanding can be tough to find. Some are disowned by parents after coming out. The center is there to help give and support them, offering a safe place on campus to meet and socialize, educational programming, and scholarships and other resources. Only about 7% of the nation's colleges and universities operate such lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender centers on campus, and I'm proud that Penn State has emerged as a national leader in this area. I've watched the incredible changes on campus since my graduation in 1992 with a sense of excitement, optimism, and relief. There's so much good in Happy Valley, from the pioneering work of those at the LGBTA Center to the student-athletes whose graduation ranks number one among NCCAA top 25 teams. Paterno wasn't a stereotypical college football meathead. He emphasized education. The school's library bears his name. In 4 years there, I met him just once. On the morning of my graduation, I stepped outside my apartment at 6 a.m. for a cup of coffee. And there, standing on the street corner alone, was Joe Paterno. The street was deserted at that early hour, and I introduced myself. He asked about my graduation, what I studied, and my future plans. He was a grandfather figure to everyone on campus. All that makes what's happening now so unimaginable to those of us who know the university. How could this happen on our campus? How could so many turn a blind eye? I fear the answers lie in details of an extensive cover-up yet to be revealed. The fact that Mike McCreary, the witness who failed to intervene, remains on the coaching staff while Paterno has gone strongly suggests we don't have the full story yet. Did McQuarrie call university police only to have the senior officials bury the report? Nothing would surprise me now. But the scandal raises deeper questions about our society. There's been so much indignation expressed about the then-graduate assistant McQuarrie's actions. He witnessed Sandusky raping a 10-year-old boy in the showers, yet reportedly did nothing. Commentators and bloggers have insisted they would have intervened. Maybe or maybe not. Last year, a 2-year-old toddler was struck by two vans on a busy street in China. 18 pedestrians and cyclists passed by the child, who later died before someone finally stopped to help. The incident and the Sandusky scandal reminds me of a lecture I attended while at Penn State. My political science professor was talking about nationalism and the rise of the Nazi Party in Germany. It was a frigid February morning, and just before class started, she walked to the back of the room and opened a window. As she spoke, the classroom grew colder and colder, and the students began donning coats and hats. As the professor talked about the circumstances under which societies turn to nationalism, student after student expressed their doubt and indignation. That could never happen in the United States. Finally, when the cold became too much even for the professor, she said, "How could you be sure you would stand up to government and its weapons and tanks when none of you even had the nerve to ask me to close the window?" It's a lesson that rings tragically relevant today. Were senior officials afraid to call police because they wanted to protect the lucrative revenue stream provided by the football team? Were custodial staff who reportedly witnessed Sandusky's crimes deterred by reporting him for fear of losing their jobs? It's comforting to think we would have all helped that 10-year-old boy, but an entire network of adults failed him and so many others. To the students at Penn State, the eyes of the nation are upon you this weekend. The Penn State alumni who are disillusioned and angry, there are good people and institutions at the university and state college who need our support. And to everyone shaking their heads on the sideline, let the sad spectacle remind us of the need to be better people, to look out for one another, and especially the most vulnerable among us. So that was posted today. And I thought those are some good points, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that also I checked out, I had a little article back in my Straight Talk from 2006, you know, in my monthly newsletter. And in this newsletter, I'm giving some questions and answers that wives would come up with, you know, like the most common questions that came my way. Like, for instance, this article was called, it's from 2001. Wow, that's a long time ago. That's like 10 years ago, Facing Our Fears of Dealing with a Gay Husband. So, like, for instance, I had questions in there, if my husband is gay, will my children be gay? And then I had a question, can my child's sexuality be influenced if she or he spends time with his father and sees his lifestyle? And then I put this one, which I thought was important because it was a real fear to me at that time. I mean, I just started with the newsletters, but it says, do I have to worry about my gay husband being around my son? I read stories about some gay men liking younger boys, and it scares me. And what about his gay friends? Will they go after my son? And I hear that question all the time, or make hear comments like that. Do you hear that too, Misty?
Yes, a lot. A lot. It's a big concern.
I wrote, I understand this fear. It comes from the darkest side of the horror stories that we tend to hear when learning about homosexuality. I think a lot of this fear comes from the fact that our own husbands or ex-husbands are fixated on younger men. But it's ironic how we don't fear for our daughters when we are married to straight men. The thought of incest would never cross our minds, even if there is a far greater number of father-daughter incestuous relationships than there are gay father-son concerns. I won't say that this doesn't happen or can't happen, but I certainly wouldn't worry about this happening. This is a very irrational fear. Just because a person is gay doesn't mean that he is a child molester. It is so important to be able to differentiate between homosexuals and pedophiles. Homosexuals get the bum rap of being pedophiles, which is very disturbing to me. Pedophiles prey on innocent children, male and female, without much differentiation of whom they victimize. Even within the realm of pedophilia, there are many different kinds of child molesters, which makes the situation even more complex. However, it is not unusual for gay men to like guys who are much younger than they are. We feel the sense of discomfort when we find many of our husbands going after or out with younger men once they come out. This certainly does seem to be the natural trend with gay men, especially when they come out at a later age. I have no concrete answer on why this happens, just numerous theories formed from the answers I've received from gay men that I discuss this with, including my own ex-husband. Some say it's because they are recapturing their own youth. Others say that they are finally being able to act on the attraction they've had since they were that age but never had a chance to explore. Although the following statements will offend the sensitivities of some of my gay friends, I'll risk it. The value system of gay men differs from the value system of straight women when it comes to acceptance of having sexual relations with younger men in their teenage years. What would be totally unacceptable for us as proper conduct is quite acceptable within the gay community. I'm not sure where gay men draw the line of acceptable ages for pursuing young men. However, I don't think that many gay men would object to a man at any age having sexual encounters with teenagers who are 17 or 18. The concern we all have is, where does the line stop? Stop the drop. Is 16 okay? Is 15 or 14, 13? There are some very shaky grounds when we speak about this. As wives or ex-wives, the thought of our husbands being with a young man whom we see as teenagers is a repulsive thought. We would feel a sense of repulsion for our husbands if our husbands were straight and pursuing 17-year-old girls. So it's just not a gay issue. However, we are so devastated by the imagery of our husbands with other men that the thought of them being with younger men still in their teens is far more discomforting to us. This, added to the fact that it is not only acceptable, but common behavior within the gay community is what's so upsetting to us. The explanation that these teenage boys are seeking older men because it represents a sense of security, experience, and stability doesn't comfort us at all. We are just sickened at the visualization. We are also worried about our own sons. It's a common fear that we have on some level. Will our husbands' friends be pursuing our sons as they go through their adolescent years? I worried about it. Is it a rational fear? I don't know, but it doesn't stop me from feeling this way. So that's what I wrote about 10 years ago. But I think that over the last 10 years, you know, I can really say that, you know, I don't think it's any different between gays and straights. You know, when I was the age 14, I was molested. And I was molested by a 28-year-old man. And, you know, I just kind of kept it, like, I didn't think, I was pretty, you know, older than my age at that point. So I just thought it wasn't such a horrible thing. You know, in retrospect, of course it was.
Right.
But I think there are plenty of young girls who are molested by guys who are, you know, a lot older than they are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's not just
a gay thing.
It's not. And I think that's what you touched on there. It's not. And another thing, it's not uncommon and that you touched on that when straight husband, straight wife are married, get divorced in their midlife, oftentimes that husband, straight ex-husband, will go for someone much younger. I mean,
yeah, and you know, like,
if
you're a famous celebrity, you know, nobody thinks anything of it, right?
Right. It's all okay. It's okay, but it's, you know, that's another place that, you know, gay men do tend to do that. They'll a lot of times go for much younger men, but you also see that on the straight side as well.
Yes, I see plenty of straight men going after younger women.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, you know, we're not used to it. We're
right.
Not used to gay. I mean, we're
right.
Really
right.
Not. You know, we have gay friends and we see different things. But when it happens in our own families with our own husband, it makes it much more personal. So I think that we have a lot of fears. Some are just not rationally based, but I think they're normal to have these fears. You know, they're based on what society is, you know, always talking about, but they're not necessarily, they don't really have any truth to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that, you know, you have to rationally think that, you know, just because your husband's gay doesn't mean that your child's going to be molested or there's more gay child molesters. And I guess that was the point that I was trying to make from the beginning on this, that, you know, I feel very bad that gay people do have to get this rap, because they're certainly, you know, it's just one more thing going against them for no reason, you know, except that people are really prejudiced. And then I guess, you know, I would like to ask you something, Misty, in your opinion as a therapist, because I certainly just can't figure this out. So maybe you can. Like, take a look at Jerry Sandusky, who was, you know, the pedophile from Penn State. Mm-hmm. And here he was, a married man, and, you know, he had children, even though I read that they were adopted. But still, you know, he had children, he had a wife. And that's another thing, by the way, with the wife. I mean, he had all these young kids sleeping over in his house and, you know, having sex with them in his, you know, in the house. I can't believe for all those years that his wife would be totally that, you know, unknowing or unsuspecting. You know, he would take these kids away with him to all these events and stay in the hotels with them. You know, I find it really hard to believe that she had no clue that while she was in her house, this was still going on in her house. But that's another story for another time. But I guess what kind of bothers me is that here's a man who had all this respectability. He had a wife and children. I mean, didn't he think that what would happen if he got caught, you know, how this would affect his wife and his family? And it kind of brings me back to what we were talking about, you know, in the last couple of weeks about public figures who go out. You know, we were talking about the mayor last week in New Jersey or the week before, you know, who was caught in California with a young guy. Then we had in August the state senator or state representative from Indiana who, you know, met the guy on Craigslist and was texting, you know, I'll pay you this and that, so you have a total record of whatever he wants to say coming from his, you know, cell phone. So I just don't understand the mentality of people. I mean, if you, I think that cheating is one thing, but going ahead and, you know, doing it as a public figure, I mean, don't they think about, you know, the consequences at all? Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
No, I don't think they do. I think sometimes the higher they are, I think the least likely chance they have, they think that they'll fall. Because there sometimes goes along some narcissism with that, I believe, where that they think that they're above getting caught sometimes, that they're looked up to so much. Well, especially when you're dealing with kids that are at risk. Because I could just hear it now. I mean, I'm not saying he said this, but oftentimes a scenario would be, well, who would believe you anyway? You know, me against this young child that's at risk, probably coming from broken home, probably coming from poverty, could even live in what someone would call the projects. You know, who knows, you know, where this kid comes from. So when you look at it like that, in that hierarchy, he's way above. So who's going to listen to this kid sometimes, you know? And that's what's so sad. And oftentimes, a lot of stuff will go on in areas and, like, workplaces and different things, and people don't even suspect that, because, once again, it goes back to my little theory of, you know, someone that is a molester, pedophile, whatever it is that they're doing to these young, innocent children, they don't look like a cyclops, the one-eyed monster. They just don't. They can be your neighbor. They can be your coworker. They can be someone you've known for years. It's not someone that looks like a, you know, some monster off the street just coming up to pick up someone. I just think you have to be aware of these things and realize that they come in all shapes and sizes. And it's there. It's upstanding people in the community. And I do believe that they have another component of them continuing to do this is they keep on and keep on doing it because, guess what? Up until that point, they've probably not got caught. So why worry about getting caught? If they've been what they would consider successful at being a pedophile for all these years, why are they going to get caught now? You know, so they just keep building that up, and chances are they may never get caught. And it's just really sad. It's like, you know, it's a disease. I mean, that's all it is. It's a disease. I mean, it's like an alcoholic. you know, they may get up every day, I'm going to quit drinking today, but then they can't. You know, maybe the same thing runs through someone that's a pedophile. I'm going to quit this today. But yet they put themselves back in the same situation to lure in young children. I mean, who knows what goes through their mind? Quite frankly, I'm glad I don't know what goes through their mind. You know, I just think as even as a therapist, that would be such a difficult population to deal with all the time because it's just something that's so, you know, that story doesn't have two sides.
Well, you know what it is.
As far as I'm concerned,
pedophilia cannot be cured. It's not a disease. Mm-hmm. It's a mental disorder, but it's one of the only mental disorders that the experts will tell you cannot be solved or resolved. It can be maybe suppressed by a lot of medication, but those feelings never go away. And if they stop their medication, then, you know, the urges are still really strong there, and then they usually act on them.
Mm-hmm. But, I agree with some therapists will not agree with you on that. I agree with you on that. That's why I don't work with that population because I couldn't do them. Quite frankly, as a therapist, you have to know what your strengths are, and that's not one of my strengths. I don't believe in that population, so I would not work with that population.
Because they have a high recidivism rate. I think they need to isolate that population. I'm not saying kill them because I know that wouldn't be very merciful unless they really acted on it like Jerry Sandusky, where I think he should be killed. But, you know, I think they need to isolate them like in maybe North Dakota, you know, someplace where it's very spacious and they create their own colony of pedophiles. And that's where they have to spend the rest of their days because they won't be changing their behavior. And everybody's at risk. I mean, you know, we have this list that you can look up at any time on the computer called, you know, Megan's Law List, where they have all the pedophiles who are, you know, on parole or whatever. For pedophilia, you have to list, you know, where you live. You have to inform people where it is. You know, you can look up in your neighborhood, put in your zip code, and they'll tell you where everybody who's, you know, on probation or parole for that, you know, where they live, so you can see in your neighborhood where the pedophiles are. And I know that sounds like a tough punishment, but, you know, in the meantime, people have to really be careful because if you have children and they're living in your neighborhood, you know, it's an issue because they really aren't getting better. They're just delaying, you know, acting on what they want or suppressing it for the moment, but eventually, you know, they revert back to their old behaviors. So that's one thing that, you know, can never be solved or cured. So they really need to be isolated. But, you know, I'm talking more about, Miss B, when you have these guys who aren't pedophiles, you know, they're just going after gay guys and going to hotel rooms and then announcing, I'm the sheriff of some, you know, some New Jersey county, or I'm the, you know, state senate in Indiana. And then they show these guys their identification, like they're bragging about it. Do they think that nobody's ever going to find out? I mean, it's bad enough to cheat, but to cheat and tell who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot of guys, at least, who have the decency not to announce anybody who they are. But these guys somehow think that their position and their power, you know, is going to protect them. You know, they have an inflated sense of reality about themselves, I think. Do you agree with that?
I just think that they're so egotistical or maybe have so much narcissism that they think, wow, this person is just going to be in awe because of who I am. They think they're beyond someone spilling the beans. I think they think they're beyond that. So the ones that do mention it, it makes me question how many more did not.
I know. It's really,
those types of situations, you know.
It's really scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many things about human nature that I just don't really, you know, understand. And I don't think I'm ever going to understand it, no matter how much I study it. Like, not to go really off the topic, but here's another thing I'm never going to understand on the lighter of this evening's conversation. Now, this was a top headline yesterday on AOL, and it came from the Huffington Post. And, you know, it's one of their top stories.
Uh-huh.
And it says, here, the headline is, sex with animals can lead to penis cancer after this new study was done.
Oh,
and, you know, talking about, you know, men who have sex with animals. And believe it or not, you know, I think this is much more prevalent than we realize, that there are a lot of men who do have sex with animals. The fact that they had to do this whole study that was leading to, you know, penis cancer study, you know, to me was really amazing. And I'll just read you here what it says. It says here that this couldn't happen to a nicer group of guys. If you're searching for a reason not to have sex with animals, add this to the list. It could give you penis cancer, according to a new study published by the Journal of Sexual Medicine. The authors found that men who had sex with animals were twice as likely to develop penile cancer as those who stick with their own kind. Lead author Stefania Bucasio-Zaki, a urologist in San Paolo, gave the Live Science... he said, the genital mucous membranes of animals could have different characteristics from human genitalia, and animal secretions are probably different than human fluids. Perhaps animal tissues are less soft than ours, and non-human secretions would be toxic for us. And he goes on to say, you know, they have a higher risk. And then what really kind of cracked me up is that it said that a member of the pro-zoophilia group told the Huffington Post by email that the results of the study should prompt people to take precautions like using a condom when having sex with animals. Oh. She added that it was unlikely to deter diehard zoophiles. They may become more cautious, said Sally Graves, but they wouldn't change their nature. One thing that did change recently was the law in Florida, where a measure banning bestiality received unanimous support in both chambers of the state's legislature earlier this year. The sentiment was overwhelming, but the political process was muddled, requiring 3 attempts to pass the bill. That would make Florida the 37th state with such a measure on the books, according to the information on the Animal Legal Defense Fund website. The group which advocates for animal protection laws said that prior to the Florida bill, 36 states and 3 U.S. territories have laws which expressly criminalize the sexual assault of an animal, though these provisions are often poorly equipped to accomplish meaningful convictions. Those states without such statutes are left to consider changes via the anti-cruelty laws, which, due to both the nature of the criminal conduct itself and often lengthy lapses between assaults, any investigation or examination of the animals are often ill-fitting for successful prosecutions. So, it says, additionally, the research found that people who said they had sex with animals also reported more venereal diseases. How do you feel about that? I thought being an American gay man was tough.
You've almost got me speechless at this point. You know, how do you even comment to that? You know, I think I may take my pass, okay? If I'm allowed a pass. Let me take my pass, because I just, you know, there's something, I like to live in my own little world, and this would be one of those things that I don't not even like to think that people
do. Well, to be
do.
Quite frank with you, Misty, I had to do a really important study on bestiality for another book that I wrote, and it was very interesting to me because, you know, I learned just like there are different kinds of pedophiles, there are different kinds of people who have animals with, you know, animal sex. And it's kind of like similar to the pedophile deal. Like, some people are just fixated and love their animals, and they can't develop, you know, human relationships, but they treat their animals like their girlfriend or boyfriend. Or, no, I think more with men, you know, going after sheep and stuff. But then there are those who are just in it for the sexual act, and, like, you know, just so happens a goat or a sheep is handy. So they have no thoughts about not having sex with them. I mean, you know, and you'd be surprised how many people I know who are really familiar with this. And I
know.
Keep
asking,
have you heard of it where you are?
I have heard of people doing that. I have never worked with a client. I worked briefly with a woman that she was suspicious that her partner was doing something such as that. And it's a really sad situation. I mean, it really is. It's something that, quite frankly, it's just, it's almost unimaginable, you know, to do something like that with an animal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, so there's other things out there in situations like what we have, you know, been married to a gay husband. There's other situations out there, like where people have different fetishes and different things that can really be strange for a relationship and something really hard on relationship. So it's very serious. It's a very serious situation. I'm not aware of the statistics on it because, and like you, I've not done much research on it. But it's out there, and it's one of those things that it's like, wow, you know.
Tons of
how
thousands.
Do people do that? Why do people do that? You know, I don't think there are answers for that, but people, they do things like that.
Well, you know, first of all, there are tens of thousands of people into bestiality in this country, and they're called either zoophiles. You know, those are the people who really love their animals and develop this unique relationship with them that leads to, you know, having sex. And then there are the others who are just purely into bestiality because, you know, they just want to have sex and the animal is handy. But, I mean, I don't think that either way is a normal relationship to have. And I personally, you know, I just don't know any people personally who do this stuff. But one thing I was always wondering, and I just can't get the answer to, like when men have, you know, sex with like a sheep or a goat, it's like if you see like 40, 50 sheep somewhere, like how do you pick out the one you're going to be with?
I don't know.
Like, what is it based on? Are they looking for the one who has the prettiest eyes? You know, do they care if it's a male or a female? You know, these are a lot of questions that I just can't find the answers to. Like, nobody.
So, I guess our lesson to learn tonight is if you start dating someone, they own sheep or goats, to be careful. I don't know. You know, I don't know how they pick those out. That's a very good question, though.
You know, like some people tell me they go to the one that's least, you know, resistant. But, you know, that's possible. But who knows? You know, I just don't know. I can't figure out the thinking of, you know, so many different kinds of little crazy things in life. You know, certain things. Like, I don't understand the whole issue of, you know, sexuality when it comes to pain. Like, why is pain a turn-on sexually for some people?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do they have to get beaten or whipped or humiliated to feel sexually excited?
And I think that's very common. That's very common.
Yeah, well, I still don't get it. I mean, it's one of the things in life I'm never going to get. You know, I think I can make up a new book called Things in Life I'm Never Going to Get, and I could probably write more about that than anything.
Probably.
And that's one of the things that, you know, I've studied it, I've looked at it. It's not like I'm not trying to figure it out, but I still can't figure it out. I can't figure that out. I can't figure out people who have, you know, fetishes with the shoe fetishes, you know, the feet fetishes.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different fetishes that men have. And, you know, the cross-dressing, I don't get that. You know, the ones who are into transsexuals, I understand that a little bit better because it makes men feel less guilty, you know, if there's a man who looks like a woman and who's attractive, who has breasts, but, you know, still has a penis, and he doesn't have to feel it's really gay. You know, that I can understand a little bit better. But in general, I just think it's, you know, a lot of things that I don't get with these fetish things with these guys. And with the women also, I know women who are into the same thing with the pain, humiliation, you know, with the guys, like, there's so much stuff, you know, so there's too many things to go into that I don't want to end our show on an unpleasant kind of note like that. But I guess, you know, someday maybe I'll just try to write that book on things I'll never understand. That would probably be my longest book because there's just so many things about human nature that I don't understand. So, do you have any things that you don't understand, Misty?
Wow.
About human nature?
I think there's lots of things I don't understand about human nature. But I've got to the point, it's like, well, okay, I guess I'm not going to get it, you know. So I think you've covered a lot of the things that I don't understand. And right now, I can't. My mind is still on some of the questions you've asked, so I can't think of anything else right now.
I think we'll have to ask my friend Gloria to come back on the show. She's a sex therapist.
Yes.
She said she'd
be
more than...
I was just thinking about her. She's probably run through all kinds of stuff that we I would never even think of.
Absolutely. I'm sure she has. So, yeah, I was gonna, you know, Gloria wrote to me last couple weeks ago and said she'd be very happy to come back on our show. So, you know, definitely we'll be looking forward to having her, you know, maybe sometime in December. So we can talk about things that we just don't understand, and maybe she'll have a better insight because I think she works a lot more, you know, with those kind of issues. You know, it takes a special person to do it, and I'm just not it. Anyway, I just wanted to mention also that coming up, like I say, Debbie will be our guest next week, and then at the beginning of December, I'm really excited that on December 4th, we're going to have our friend Patsy back. And, you know, Patsy's our Christian counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And, like I said, she just does a wonderful job in working with Christian women and getting them to understand why, by the biblical, you know, different kinds of quotations in the Bible, why it's really, you know, important for them to leave their marriages. Because so many of our Christian women feel so guilty over, you know, getting a divorce because they're thinking that they have to stay in a bad marriage forever due to the scriptures that they learn about. And Patsy really, you know, takes over on that end to help women understand. And in fact, every Tuesday night she has a show called Embarrass the Alligator on Block Talk Radio. And she has some wonderful topics if you have a chance to listen. So, you know, you should do yourselves a favor and really listen to Patsy because she really has inspired so many of our women and helped them. So she'll be our guest on December 4th. And once again, Debbie from Florida will be our guest next week, talking about men on the down low and how to recognize, you know, what their symptoms, you know, symbols are. You know, the down low was a term, Misty, that was coined and phrased really a few years ago by, I guess, J.L. King, who wrote his book On the Down Low,
mm-hmm.
and referring mostly, you know, of course, to African American women.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they call it in that community the down low. I call it in the our community, the low down. Does it really matter?
Right.
It all means the same to me. You know, they're all doing the same thing. But, of course, in the African-American community, that's where the HIV status just has grown at such a fast rate, so much
bigger
than other
mm-hmm.
communities. So that's why it's really important to have extra information. And Debbie will be giving us that next week. So, Misty, we've come to the end of our hour, and we've talked about some unusual topics.
We have. We have. A mixed bag of topics, for sure.
Yeah, you never know which way the show is just going to go. So, hopefully you can all join us again next week, and we really appreciate your listening. If you have any questions, feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com. You know, if you're interested in receiving my newsletter and you're not getting it, please write to me also, and I'll be happy to put you on my newsletter list. And hopefully this will be a good week for you, but remember, we do have our support chat. If you need additional support, you know, we'd love to have you join us. It's every Thursday and Sunday evening at 9:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I just did want to mention for our friends in Australia, I'm trying to get together to start our Australian chat up again. And starting as of January, the first week in January, I'm going to make it at a different time so that hopefully it'll be convenient for everyone. And I know that the time changes there kind of threw us off for a while, but we'll be getting back on track, and I'll be contacting our Australian women to see if you're interested. And if you'd like to find out more about Misty, you can go to her website at mistyhall.com or write to her at mistylinhall@AOL. And you can find out more about her chats. And Misty, you have some work to do quickly. What's that work again? Oh, yeah, so you have to send me that notice for your chat, you know, for your support.
Oh, I do. I'm going to back
yeah,
for
I'm
your...
going out in 2 days, so you better rush it.
I
will.
Maybe
it'll be fun.
Oh, we'll get that right, dear.
Yeah, so send me a little note. And I'll include it to all of our people in the newsletter that you're having your, you know, sessions for the holidays to give support. So without much further ado, we want to wish all of you a wonderful week. And remember, life was never meant to be this complicated. Try to uncomplicate your life. And we're here to help you do that. So, Misty, you can say goodnight first.
Good night and love to all.
Okay. All of you have a wonderful week, and we'll be back with you. And good night, Misty.
Good night. Bye-bye.